CliffCentral.com.
Euphonic. How are you, man?
How you, gay?
Yeah, I'm good, brother. Gay. That's still my Jewish friend school. Gay.
How you, gay?
How's it, eh? Yeah. How's it, Timbs?
Yeah, power, man.
You're right, eh?
Yeah, yeah. All good, all good, all good.
Yeah, dude, it's been a long time since I saw you. We've spoken quite a lot over the last year or two.
Yeah, a lot's happened as well, like in everyone's world.
Yes. I mean, what's going on in media at the moment is just unbelievable. You're in the middle of it, so you know. I know a lot of people who are just viewers or listeners might not even pick up on it, but there's so much changing that you actually can't bargain on anything right now.
Yeah. But I mean, like, you know, the ones that have their feet solidly in the ground, those are the ones that will be around when the tide is gone.
Yeah. That's right.
We'll be, and I mean, I think we'll still be here. I think we know not to be fazed by.
You've been through some stuff. I've been through some stuff, and we're still standing.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
That is all that matters. But you've had a hell of a career, and I mean, you still got some way to go. It's not as if either of us are at the end of our tether yet. But there's been a lot of water under the bridge, and when it comes to brand building, it is a hard, long slog, right?
Nah, man. I mean, like, geez, bro. You know, in a perfect world, if there weren't any other human beings, like, things would be so sweet. But where there's human beings, man, like, also just you and your own decisions and choices, like, there'll always be turmoil. And I mean, like, how do you build the perfect brand whilst still trying to be a normal day-to-day human being? It's tough, bro.
Well, I mean, what's amazing about you, and a lot of people don't even know how to begin a story like this, but, I mean, Euphonic, just that name. I mean, I see it everywhere. I hear it everywhere. People love it. People want to be a part of it. People want to share in the events and the experiences around it. And it isn't even your name. So it was something you developed entirely on your own.
Yeah. I created this alter ego.
That's got to feel good, though, because actually, you know, for me, being Gareth Cliff is something I've been since I was born.
Yeah.
And I've never really had to develop an alter ego or a side personality, a stage name or any of that stuff. So it's been a different sort of career development for me. I sometimes am jealous that, you know, certain stuff is Euphonic and certain stuff is Timba.
Yeah.
And maybe it's nice to have your life in two boxes because it's tidier in some ways, right?
Look, I think if I was a different human being, my life would be in two boxes. But listen, I'm the same person here, the same person club, on radio.
I'm by no means, I'm not saying you're bipolar. I'm really not.
No, what I'm saying is that, like, I don't see it like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, Euphonic is, and if at the time I didn't think I needed to create a DJ name because everyone was creating a DJ name, I probably still would have gone out as DJ Timba, but DJ Timba doesn't sound cool.
No, so Euphonic is very cool.
Yeah, Euphonic is extremely cool, you know, but like in no ways is it like a Beyonce Sasha Fierce vibe.
Right.
Not at all. Like, it's Timba and Euphonic are consistently like the same thing all the time.
Well, I mean, we can go into a little bit about the background because I think a lot of people probably know, but many people might not, where you started out, how you get there. Because I met up with two or three of these millennials the other day, and they were saying to me, oh, you know, if I can just get enough likes on Instagram, I'll be famous.
Yeah, we got famous before.
Like, really?
We got famous when Facebook was like actual like face recognition. Like, hi, my name is Euphonic. How are you? Do you know what I'm saying?
You'd actually have to talk to people.
Exactly. You had to talk to people, meet people face to face, and like actually get them to actually like you. Not like just click a button and feel like they've done something with the existence. No.
So what do you say when people ask you, how did you start? Where did you go? What did you do to get here? Because they want a quick answer. They don't want to listen for a long time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I'm a Mpumalanga born boy. Grew up in the East Rand of Johannesburg, which is in Benoni. Yeah. I started DJing when I was 11 by collecting music. Had my first gig when I was 14 by absolute pure chance. Yeah, a friend of mine invited me to come play at his sister's birthday party, and I didn't even know what DJing was, but he was like, you have music, so what do you do with all this music? And you're the only person I know that collects music, so you must be a DJ. So in his head, he'd figured it out, but like, I didn't even know what it was. Fast forward to 2003, I got my first club residency when I was turning 20.
What was the club called?
It was called Huzu.
I remember.
In Midrand.
Yeah. Was some club, hey?
At the time, I was just very fortunate because the owner was bringing in all the big name DJs.
Yeah.
So I got to meet Fresh, Oskido, Christos, Vinny, all of them.
Can I ask you about Oskido quickly?
Yeah.
Because this guy is a bit of a, he's like a mysterious godfather to so much of what's happened in DJing, in club music, in the whole scene, the whole industry in South Africa and even beyond the borders, like in Botswana and in Zimbabwe and even to a limited degree in other countries.
Yeah.
This guy is he's a force of nature.
No, he's the guy.
Yeah.
He is the guy. He is the...
Like the person who connects everybody else up
is
Oskido, right?
He is the Puff Daddy, the Jay-Z, the anyone that like has ever made anything big in the States or combined into one in South Africa. That's who Oskido is.
So what do you think made him the most important, influential person in the music scene?
Look, he's done a lot, but I can't speak for... like what I don't know.
What was it like when you first met him? What did you expect?
Well, the one thing that I do know about the guy that is like, he's extremely focused.
Yeah.
Even when he's like had a few, he's like extremely focused. He knows what's going on, knows what he's here for. He knows when to party and he knows when to be focused. And you know, the trick about being in this industry is like never get caught up in the party. Be the party, but don't get caught up in it.
Mm.
That's the difficult thing. And also understand the business side of it because you're here for the business. And I think also Oskido understands what poverty is. Doesn't want to go back there.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So like that for me is like the... Also just being grounded, being
humble.
Were
you really poor or were you like...
Nah, like I don't know.
Middle class poor.
Nah, like I can relate to poverty because like my grandmother comes from a rural area and I used to visit my grandmother a lot in my younger years and there was no electricity.
I'm not judging.
If you weren't poor,
that's okay too.
No, I won't say I was poor. Like I don't ever remember a day where I was like, Dad, what are we eating today? No, definitely not. But I also, on the other hand, never ever got like all the stuff that I wanted because my parents were like, you're going to get a good education. We're going to put all the money into that. So forget thinking you're going to have Jordans. Like that's not going to, if your kids, my favorite thing was but the kids next door and they'd say, well, then go and live with them next door. Let that be your dad. Let that be your mom. And
was like, your dad quite tough?
Bro, like the toughest oak in the world. The toughest oak in
mine
the world.
Mine too. Yeah bro. And it makes you strong.
100%. He's my best friend right now.
Yeah.
Like my dad, there's nothing that he doesn't know about me and my life.
You know, that is the exception in South Africa. I mean, so many people grow up without a dad. The dad either isn't around or the dad is gone.
My cry is that it's so normal that like people don't even see an issue with it. Like, yeah, but like he grew up without a father and look how he turned out. He's fine.
I reckon it's the magic ingredient. I have to be honest, the number of people who I've met who are successful, and I by no means am saying that people who don't have a dad in their lives are going to be a disaster. There are obviously going to be people.
Do you see how your life has turned out? You say something logically, and then I have to go and explain and justify why you said it.
Because, this is a problem.
Because
you and
Gareth Cliff's a dick, and
he just said this about everybody. But don't you think it is like there's definitely something about a male role model in your life,
and 100%.
About having someone strong that you can rely on,
100%. Because I mean, and it can go south very quickly. But like if you have like a responsible male figure in your life, you know how to treat people, you know how to treat the woman in your life, you know how to treat your kids, you know how to be stern, you know how to be responsible, because a lot of oaks aren't responsible.
Yeah.
You know how to be responsible and you see it like, and I've got friends that like grew up without a father and you can see that like on certain elements, you're not responsible when it comes to this. And I can't expect you to understand because our perspectives are never going to be the same. Like not all of us are raised the same. So I guess like people like you and I need to keep our mouths closed or open them open them and then justify
as
ourselves.
Little as possible. No, but I mean, it's also our lives that we use, you know, we open our mouths and we sell ourselves. We sell everybody else's stuff. You know, someone once said to me that if you're on radio, you're selling dishwashers, you're selling insurance policies, you're selling everything that you're advertising on your show.
Yeah.
And actually, you have to be good at using your mouth for those purposes. And also for entertaining people and for kind of knowing sometimes when it's okay to be inappropriate.
Yeah.
These days, it's like a minefield, though. It really is. On social media, it's impossible. No matter what or when or where or how. And we'll talk about some of the controversies I've been through that you've been through. And I think that that's all that people want you to be about sometimes. They don't want to hear the sensible, thoughtful, interesting stuff that doesn't create shit.
They want you to be dramatic. They want to see things from their point of view. And they, whatever you say, they basically interpreting it the way that they would handle this thing if it was them.
All right, well, let's talk about this now because it's something we have common ground on and I think it's something people care about. So who gives you the most shit? I mean, who are your trouble target markets? Do you just know, like, you know, if you say something about money, or you know you say something about white people, or if you know you say something about women?
Sadly for me, it's black South Africans on Twitter.
Yeah. What do they give you shit for?
Everything.
Because the way you sound?
Everything and
because of your success?
Like, who are you to dare to dream that big? Why would you say that? Everything I say these days has an insinuation about Bonang.
You can't. It just seems
like you can't open your mouth.
It's been a couple of years now.
You can't open your mouth. And, like, you know what the thing is? That is a part of my history. It's a part of who I am. It's part of my, like, my DNA. Like, I'll never be able to just take an erase and erase that part of my life. So
you wouldn't want to.
So I'm sensitive to the fact that, you know, like, it is in existence, but, like, also other people.
And let's be fair, there were good times and you guys enjoyed being with each other for as long as you were. I mean, 100%. It's like when I think back to ex-girlfriends, and we might not get along so well now, some of us, I try to be friends with as many of them as possible.
Yeah, I just made the mistake of dating Kim Kardashian. That was my biggest mistake.
And you're not Kanye, is that
what
you're
saying? Yeah, I'm definitely not Kanye, bro. Definitely not.
But this is the interesting thing about you, is, like, even though you're out there and you're a very public figure, everybody knows your name, people know who you're dating a lot of the time. You don't put it out there, but they find out.
Yeah.
And it's hard to, you know, where do you go for dinner? What do you do for fun?
Nah, man, I think, you know, like I said, it's, if you know that this is the territory that you're walking into and it's dangerous territory and you still walk in there, like, it's your fault.
You deserve it.
Don't, but my relationships before Bonang and my relationships currently aren't publicized.
But the hard thing is to try and keep a little bit of you for you.
Well, I mean, like, it depends on who you're with. Like, the person that I'm with now, like, trust me, it's like, it's as peaceful as it can possibly.
She's not looking for attention.
Absolutely not. Look, absolutely not.
Even people who are not famous at the time you start dating.
I haven't had a fight in 2 years.
That's amazing.
Like, I haven't had a major, like even to the point where people have had to raise their voices.
This is the female Jesus that you found.
I think so. Like, honestly, I think so.
And it's that good.
And it makes me wonder, like, what was I doing with my life, you know? But it's fine, because, like, I am a better human being because of my past, and, you know,
but I got to give you credit. You don't have, with the exception of controversies that you didn't create, largely, you don't have a whole lot of your personal life being splashed around.
Nah,
you're not one of those people.
There are
plenty of people in South Africa whose lives are totally public.
I cringe. Like, bro, I still get taken aback when I see a music video of mine on TV.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how to feel when I hear one of my songs on radio.
Really?
So now imagine, like, when my private life is out there. Like,
are you self-conscious about that stuff?
I'm just not in, like, euphonic mode all the time. Like, I know it's the monster that I created, but, like, I don't know how to explain it, but it's a bit weird. Like, every single time, like literally, if I hear my song on radio, I'm not like, woo, there's my jam. I'm like, oh, geez, like, it's actually playing. Like, wow. Because I think it's also just, part because when I started my career, this is where I wanted to be. And now that it's here and it's all manifesting and it's happening, like, I don't know how to deal with it, really. You know, like, and I'm very grateful of, like, everything that's happened to me and the things that can continue to happen to me. But I also just know that every time I see a euphonic music video on TV, I hear a song, I'm like, I have to go work. Because getting in the industry is easy, but
Keeping
it in here and the consistency and and maintaining it is difficult. So I know that those things happening is just more pressure for myself to be able to keep that up, because I don't want to be, oh, like 10 years ago, there was this guy, like, what was his name again? Oh, remember the one with that guy that did that song with me? Because I don't want that to happen.
That's terrible.
You know what I mean?
That is the worst, and it does,
because it does happen. It's the reality of the industry.
And you have a certain shelf life, but some brands have managed to last a long time. Now I want to come into your relationship with Fresh here, because very few partnerships whether it's a romantic partnership with, you know, a girlfriend or a wife or whatever, or a business relationship, last as long as like you two have. When did you first meet Fresh, and how did that whole thing happen?
It's actually funny, man. Like, I met Fresh even before like I physically met him.
you knew who he was.
Yeah, I knew who he was. I studied who he was. I don't want to go like...
You're a fanboy.
Yeah, look, I was definitely a fan.
Sure.
And like I did this thing in high school where I, for like as part of business economics, like they taught you what a SWOT analysis was.
Yeah.
So at the time, like I want to be a great DJ in the country. Who are the great DJs?
Yeah.
Write them down. What are all the great DJs doing? This one's on radio. This one's doing TV. This one releases CDs. This one does this.
Yeah.
This one hangs out here. This one hangs out there. All of those things. So I took like time to like understand like all these key players.
Uh-huh.
And it's just so happened that like when I did meet Fresh, like there was like a natural, like I don't want to make it sound soft, but like there was a natural, like we click, you know what I mean? I get him, he gets me. I've never been like, as much as I was a fan, I never acted like a fan.
Yeah, but you're both alpha males and you're both very driven and you're both hungry for success.
Yes.
And you're both ambitious. I mean, Fresh, don't get me wrong, I have all the world's respect for him, but he's not a hard ass. He's not one of those people.
No.
You know, he's not a, you never feel with Fresh that he's going to try and use whatever tactic he needs to win.
And he takes, you know, pride in seeing other people flourish.
Now, isn't that a rare thing?
And I think also, like, he comes from a similar family background as me. Like, at home, I was never taught about scarcity.
Mm.
I was always taught about abundance. I was always taught that in order for somebody else's candle to shine, you don't need, your light doesn't
that
need
to
dim
down.
That
is so important. What you just said now is if more people could learn that lesson, we would have so much less unhappiness.
And I mean, like, Fresh is, like, 10 years older than me. We've done a lot of things together. Like, and just to like show you the type of person that he is, anything that I've ever done with Fresh, it's always been 50-50 down the middle. Fresh has never said to me...
Even when he was a massive brand and you weren't yet.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. He's never said to me, listen, go get me water, or like, listen,
never treated you like his apprentice.
Yeah, he's never
apprentice.
Treated me like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. He never ever treated me like his apprentice. Always treated me as his equal. And it's been good because like, from that lesson, I've learned how to treat other people. You know what I mean? Like, I'll never look down on the next person. I'll always find like a way to help the next person.
And he's not threatened at all.
By what, bro?
No, but understand, like, for a lot of people.
I'm saying any human being, like, what are you threatened about? Because on God's earth, right, no other human being can ever, ever, even after you've died, can say, I am Gareth Cliff. No one can.
I'm saying that there are a lot of people who don't see it the way you do. And it's just amazing that the two of you have worked together as long as you have. You understand him. He understands you. There's absolutely no jealousy.
And listen.
Because people do. They compare themselves to each other. And then they end up...
It's never been smooth. It hasn't been smooth sailing as well. But if I've ever had an issue with how he's handled or done things, I was always able to pick up the phone and tune him. Like, tune him.
You guys ever had a fight?
No, we've never had a fight, but like he'll pick up the phone and be like, dude, like, what the fuck was this? And like, why is this happening like that? And I can do the same thing.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of that relationship. And literally, like, if something happens at 1:05, right? At 1:10, it's sorted out already. So we don't like let things linger on and like wait and like who waits.
There's no passive aggressive shit going on.
And if it has waited longer than that, it's because either I was waiting to tune him in person or he was waiting to tune me in person. And like, that's like one of the best things you can do for, because the dude's a mentor of mine, he's a business partner and he's a friend.
I still have people who come up to me and say, when I drive up to the petrol station to fill up my car, they go, where's Fresh? Like, we travel around together.
Or
like,
live in a commune together.
Right, exactly. But I mean, with you guys, you actually are close. I mean, you probably spend a lot of time around him and his family. You guys know each other that well.
Yeah.
You know, I can't claim to be so close and so tight with Fresh. But with you, that's the case. So, I mean, you also have to balance up the business relationship with the personal relationship.
Sure.
Sometimes those lines get blurred, and maybe sometimes he'll say to you, geez, do you need to be doing this right now? Or how about that? Or he'll ask you about something that he reads in the papers.
Mm.
Does it ever get complicated?
Nah, bro. It's so easy. Like, I mean, some of the decisions that we've made, like I'll pick up the phone and be like, yo, like let's do this. And he'd be like, you know what? Like, yeah, that's cool. Let's do it. Or he'll be like, I was actually thinking about the same thing. Just like, yeah, let's definitely do it. So it's never been like a difficult one. And it's nice that like morally, like we stand on the same ground. Like if I think something's wrong, he also thinks something is wrong. And if I think something's right, he'll show me why it's actually not.
Yeah.
And I'll end up agreeing with him or vice versa. Like it's dope. It's cool, man.
Because also being in the club scene, which really you guys, without being silly about this, in terms of the commercial club scene in South Africa, there really aren't names that are bigger than you two.
Yeah.
And you got gigs booked well into the future. I mean, yeah, probably sure. Like working 3 months in advance right now. And you can command these fees and you can draw a crowd. But you also have to deal with like club owners, and there's sometimes very dodgy dealings that are going on. And you have to be morally sorted out to know where you fit into this. Otherwise, you're going to get pulled in.
Yeah, for sure.
And before you know it, you know, you're going to be embroiled in this deal with that one and that deal with this one. Like, you don't need that.
Yeah, I think fortunately for me, Fresh was doing it for like the longest time.
Yeah.
And
but I'm sure you've had people say to you, for example, we're going to start a club, come in, we'll give you 20%.
Or
we'll give you...
We've had it, but I mean, like, bro, we've had all the offers in the world.
Yeah.
It's just, again, is this part of your plan? Because you see, the terrible thing about the music industry, when you are starting and you want to play at Taboo, you want to play at H2O, and you want to play at Madison's, and you want to play wherever, that's you making things happen because you're picking up the phone. Now you're playing at Madison's and somebody's like, listen, come play in Polokwane. That's things happening to you. So unfortunately, a lot of us forget and we like sit back and wait for the phone calls to come. I mean, like Fresh till this day still is like, I'm in Cape Town on Friday. I can play in Paul. So like, I'll call Paul. Hi, I'm in town. Can
right.
You know what I'm saying? So like, we still make things happen. We're not sitting around waiting for the phone call from whatever brand manager, waiting for whatever opportunity to happen. Like, we're active in this thing.
Right.
You know?
And I know a little bit about this because it's also, you know, there's a certain amount of availability. You only have a certain number of hours in a day. You've got to maximize the amount of income you can bring in a short time. And I mean, I know you're now into property and all kinds of things, which we could talk about in a moment. But there's also cash business that comes in here, which not so much anymore.
Yeah.
It's difficult now. But in the old days, you'd be carrying around quite a lot of cash and things can go horribly wrong.
Yeah. I mean, fortunately, I've never had an instance where that's gone that way. And, you know, like just from the learnings of like seeing how other people have done it and seeing what other people have gone through,
yeah,
like try and minimize how you are rolling around because you never know. Like, you always a target. So like, if I know that I'm going to be out at night in the club, like there will be no cash swapping hands or like anything like that happening. I'm not saying it hasn't happened. It has happened, but you need to minimize it as much as you can, because the reality of it is that we are living in South Africa, you know?
And there's going to be, you know, someone will hear, oh, Euphonic's got 50 grand on him.
Exactly.
And before you know it, you've been knocked out by someone from behind. You don't know what's going on.
Exactly.
They disappeared with your cash. Yeah. You wake up like 2 hours later. You don't know what's happened.
Like, those are the risks of it, man. I mean, like,
we've all heard stories.
No, for sure. Like, and it does happen. It does happen. I'm not going to say it doesn't happen. And, I mean, like, I've heard of dodgy dealings where club owners have given Oaks half and then said, you'll get the other half when you get here. And then Oaks have been mugged on their way.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, then who do you blame?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Because, like,
you know the only people who could have known.
Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, like, the general opinion is people think DJs are always, like, rolling around in loot anyway. And it's
correct. Yeah. Well, I mean, look at how DJing's changed, too. When you started off, it would have been in vinyl.
Yeah.
Then you would have gone to CDs. Mm-hmm. Then you would have gone to USBs
Serato,
right? And now it's all on. Yeah, but now it's also on laptops.
Yeah.
It's all so easy to do now. You don't need to carry around.
No, I mean, like, the barriers of entry for being a DJ are, like, everyone's a DJ. Like, literally, like, if I buy you a laptop and give you some music, you can call yourself DJ whoever. Like, that's the nature of the game. You know, which is why, like, a few years ago, I actually dropped the DJ from Euphonic.
I don't call myself
DJ Euphonic. It's just Euphonic.
Because everyone's got DJ before their name.
Yeah.
You and look on Facebook, everyone's
DJ. And it's too easy, man. It's too easy. The barriers of entry are way too easy.
What do you do when people come up to you and say, we want to be a DJ too, help us? Here's my shitty song. Please play it on your show.
I always ask them, what is your backup plan? And if they have a legitimate answer, like, I tell them, rather go and cut the grass than waste your time here, because you're gonna end up back there anyway.
And they don't realize, like, the guys who are doing this out there for a living every day and don't have a radio show or anything, they're earning minimum wage.
Correct.
And it's a hobby. You should be doing something else. It's not a job.
Yeah.
It's a job for, you know, look, Calvin Harris.
If you're going to be a DJ, you need balls that are this big.
Yeah.
Because it's not an easy industry. You know, like, when the reason why I've been so successful is because I got kicked out of home when I was 20 because my dad was like,
go and earn money.
Yeah, no, not even. Like, if you, because I wanted to drop out of varsity to pursue being a DJ, because I knew that me getting a degree isn't going to help me, because all I want to do is be a DJ.
Right.
And if there was a DJ school, I would have gone to that at the time, but there was none. And part of my success is that I had to.
What did your dad say to you when you dropped out?
He said, well, no, he was just like, no child of mine that lives under my roof and is on my, like, part of my expenses is not going to go to school. So if you don't want to go to school, then clearly you're a man. Go and fend for yourself.
Wow.
And I did. And failing was not an option.
But it's also, I mean, you must have had a couple of gigs where you've pitched up. I know I have. You pitch up and there's like 10 people because the club hasn't advertised properly.
That's fine.
So you'll play for those 10 people?
Listen.
You'll do the best set you can?
Yes, because, I mean, like, at any given time, like, the fact that one other person loves and appreciates who you are, you should take proper notice of that.
It's one other human being. It's soul destroying when you go to a place.
No, of course it's soul destroying.
You know the club is paying you what every other club is paying you.
Yeah.
And they got like 20 people in there. And it doesn't happen often.
What can you do? I mean, like, in my contract, I don't play for less than 100 people.
Uh-huh.
But I usually play it by ear. Like, if I get there and there's a vibe, then, like, I'll, like, even if it's 20 people, like, if there's a vibe, I'll play. If not, I'll hang around and I'll go to each one of those 20 people
and say thank you for coming.
Yeah, and sure. Speak to them, and, you know, just not like act like a diva.
What's the most difficult gig you've had to do? Because I imagine some of the corporates are quite hard because they.
The corporates are insanely difficult because
it's difficult to read. You've got the old white people,
yeah, the people
got
that
the young
book you,
people, you know.
Think a DJ is just someone that plays music and can play all music.
Like,
and
they it's think like. It's a wedding.
Yeah, like, I'm a house dance DJ, so don't come ask me for Drake because you're not gonna get it.
And,
you know what I'm saying?
And don't ask for like 80s hits.
Yeah,
because it's not what you do.
Yeah, it's not what I do, but people don't get it. So it's up to you as the DJ to then suss out, like, and tell them that, like, listen, this is what I do and this is what I don't do.
But that's your real skill, because you can teach people to beat mix, and you've tried with me. you taught me how to do some stuff one night in Hatfield, which I didn't know. And I mean, I'd been doing it for like 6 years and I'd never clicked. So you know technically exactly what to do. You could probably mix any piece of music with any other piece of music in 5 seconds flat without ever hearing either.
Yeah.
That's a talent, but it's also a learned skill.
Yes.
But your real skill is being able to read the crowd.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, that also isn't like a thing that I read off YouTube or whatever. Like, that is.
And that's where all these guys who say they want to be a DJ, they want to look like the hero up on the stage. They want the attention. They want the free drinks. They want all that crap that you and I don't care about. But you reading the crowd, they don't think about that.
Yeah.
They go up there to play their music.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's actually part of my DNA. I grew up in Benoni, right? I went to St. Dunstan's College. I was one of few black kids in St. Dunstan's College, which means I was hanging out with white kids, listening to white kids' music.
Why the white crowd loves you so much.
Yeah. So I grew up listening to that. I'd go back to the hood.
You get shit from black people for that too?
We used to, not anymore. Okay. Like, now they think we're visionaries.
Right.
I'd go back to the hood, listen to hip-hop and Kwaito. Yeah. My parents listened to Stimela, the OJs.
Like Maskandi stuff as well too.
No, not so much Maskandi, but I've got a global view of what music's about.
All right.
And I can put all those people in a room and know that, like, if I play too much of this, these ox are going to get bored. And if I play too much of that, these ox are going to get bored. And there's songs that, like, I know that, like, everyone's going to like these particular songs. So reading a crowd is the key of being a DJ. Being a DJ is about playing the right music at the right place at the right time.
I think that's something that you can only develop with experience.
You can't be taught that.
Right?
Definitely not.
And there's no quick way to do it either.
Nah.
And this is the problem too. If you're going to be a DJ, you've got to remember that you've got to be in it for the long haul. There's going to be 5 years of No money.
That's what I say. That's what I'm saying. That's why I say, if I ask you, what's your backup plan if this thing doesn't work, and you've got a legitimate answer, you're not gonna last, because constantly in the back of your mind there's always be, but I can always go back to being an accountant. But I can always go back to doing this. But I can always. Yeah. With me, there was nothing
there
to
was
go
no
back
backup
to. This was it. So if there was backtracking to do, it was going back to the drawing board and figuring out what I was doing wrong.
But you also don't want someone to say to you, I don't have a backup plan. And they genuinely just don't, because then they lack ambition, right?
Gareth, like, honestly, like, I think, especially in South Africa, you know, like, fine, have a backup plan. But, like, I think it's so easy. And I mean, like, I see this happen all the time. Like, I mean, like, how many CEOs are there on Twitter? How many MDs of a company are there on Twitter? There's tons. And it's because people don't have the backbone to pick something and stick to it. And whether it's raining or snowing, this is what I do. Like,
right.
I sell coal, whether it's raining or snowing, this is what I do. And if selling coal doesn't work in Polokwane, I'm going to go do it in Bloemfontein. Now, I'll eventually find the right place to sell coal. That's what it's about.
There's stuff about doing the DJ, the club gigs especially, because, I mean, radio, you know, we kind of have an understanding about how a radio DJ's life goes, and a lot of radio people are losers, let's be fair.
Yeah.
But in the level of club DJing, the gigs that you do, there's also a lot of real shit you have to put up with. Traveling, and I'm not talking about flying business class around.
No.
People don't know you're driving to, like, Klerksdorp on a Friday night.
Yeah.
While all your friends are saying, hey, come to our house party. We haven't seen you in 3 years, because you work every weekend, right?
Yeah.
So you're busy Friday night, probably Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night.
Yeah.
So you never see your friends.
No, it does take its toll. The traveling is cuck. I'm a people's person, but I'm not really a people's person. Do you know
you're
what I'm
happiest,
saying? Like, I don't like the small talk.
But part of the reason you're behind the decks is because you don't want to be on the dance floor.
I don't like the small talk. I don't like the hotel food. I don't like hotels. I prefer my own bed.
Yeah.
I don't like the long drives. There's a lot about this thing that I don't like, but it's like walking through the thorn bush to get to the strawberries. Like, that's what it always is.
How many albums so far?
I think 13 or 14.
Yes. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, because I mean, like, since 2006, I think I've done an album, sometimes two albums a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
DJs are the rock stars at the moment.
They became the rock stars.
Not anymore. You're saying it's done?
No,
do you
I'm
think
saying,
we're still
no,
there?
I'm saying
mean, like, you
when I started DJing, it wasn't a rock star thing.
And how is it now? Because we know that there was kind of a peak that was reached where there was such demand. There were so many clubs. There was so much money.
Yeah, it's saturated now because there's too many DJs. Every single person that you see is a DJ. Like,
and nobody cares.
Yeah.
The audiences don't care.
Club owners are DJs. All people care about is, like, are you playing my favorite song?
Right.
Like, are you making me dance? Like, that's all that matters. But there still, with that said, are, like, a handful of superstar DJs, and I think it'll always be like that.
What is it like playing at things like Ultrafest and H2O and all of that stuff?
It's mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing because there's 10,000 people minimum standing in front of you. And if you say, everybody throw your hands up, everybody throws their hands up. So it's like, you know, like, you can get high off that kind of attention or feedback or, like, energy or whatever. But again, it's just, you know, like, euphonic on in front of them, euphonic off the decks.
So what do you do when you come off the stage? You just disappear?
Back into euphonic mode. I'll go sit, calm down, and then, like, go back and interact with people.
Okay, so you stick around. You kind
of meet,
because, like, they're there to meet you. They're not just there to hear you.
Bro. Yeah, I mean, like, especially for, like, a show like H2O or, like, Ultra, like, you get there early so that you can, like, you know, like,
get into
because it's an energy thing. You need to feel like what is the energy, and you can tell that, like, okay, this DJ isn't doing what.
Yeah, but what about
want.
Those nights where you feel like shit? Maybe you're sick. Maybe you just had an argument with someone.
The show goes on.
You still just have to do it.
Bro,
right?
I was doing court cases and I was involved in court cases and still, like, playing, like, 3-4 gigs a weekend.
Yes, sis.
It's having to smile, having to take pictures, knowing that, like, there's shit going on in your life. Like, smile, be there, do it. You have to.
Switch it on.
Yeah. The show always continues.
What about O-Ship? That's been a fun project.
O-Ship's power, man. I mean, like, it's been.
You guys sell that thing out every time.
It's amazing. But we've sold it out every single time. But don't think we've made money every single time. I think that's what people think. They're like, yeah, these guys are rolling in it. Like, listen, Oship 1, 2, and 3, we took a bath on. Oship 4 and 5, like, it's looking good.
What is...
And that's the thing. It goes back to picking something, doing it, and sticking to it. Because sometimes failure isn't an option.
Even if you break even.
It's your dream. Like, who are you to give up on your own dreams? Like, I want to see this thing being a success. On paper, I can feasibly see it being a success, and I'm going to make sure it becomes a success. Like, that's a kind of mind that you have to have. That, sure. Like, I'm not going back on my own word. Because it's fine. It's fine to let Gareth down when Gareth's like, yo, let's whatever, do something together. But, like, how do you let yourself down? Because that says a lot about you. And it says a lot about you to other people when you let yourself down. Because when people pick you now for things, they know that, like, this guy, if he says, I'm committed to this, he's committed to it. And it's for the long haul.
What would you have done if you weren't successful as a DJ? Let's imagine a world.
I can't even imagine
a world of what you would have done as a backup.
I would have been an unhappy marketing exec at like some agency or some company or like whatever. But like, I've been conditioned purely based on my own experiences. Like, dude, when your dad's like, you leave the house and you have to find your own place to play, to live. Yeah. Have to make a plan for a car.
Yeah.
Have to get money and know that, like, if I squander this money, there is no backup plan. Like, trust me, like, you learn a few things very, very quickly. Very, very quickly.
Now, when it comes to social media, we both had our ups and downs there. And it's such complicated territory at the moment because you're not sure often whether you even want to express yourself. And it's meant to be a place where you can.
Bro, I remember Twitter, like, 2009, 10.
The golden years.
What a fucking vibe. Bro, you could say anything.
Yeah.
And it would be a laugh. Because I think at the time, it was like-minded people. And it was people who didn't, like, take anything that you were saying, like over the top.
They
seriously.
Didn't go there to get upset.
Yeah, exactly.
They went there to laugh.
It was like, it was funny. Yeah. Like, yeah, if you said something, it was funny.
It's like those WhatsApp groups with just your friends.
Bro, like, I remember this one Sunday, like, I was bored at home. It must have been, like, 2009, bro. Like, and I was just, like, I did this thing on my timeline where I just told jokes. Like, literally from black jokes to Jew jokes to gay jokes. And, like, everyone was laughing. Not one person was like, how dare you? Like, everyone was laughing.
Oh, you better delete that shit now.
No, I'm saying,
you know they're going to dig it up,
for
right?
Sure. And I'm saying now, like, if I even had to say anything, like, off, you need to think about, like, every single word that you say. You know what I mean? Like, this, like, today, I tweeted, Lerato Khanyahu tweeted, she's off to another shoot. So I asked her, because she's a friend of mine, you know? And I said to her, is this another sleigh that's going to equate to nothing, or is this going to add to your bottom line? Do you know what I'm saying?
And so, you're asking as a friend.
Yes, as a friend. Yeah, so I use the word slay.
Right.
So people got upset because the word slay is associated with Bonang. And I'm like, how is the word slay associated with Bonang?
Are you tired of having to constantly justify how you feel about someone you don't really feel anything for?
Yeah, I do. I am.
That's just painful.
Because I don't hate her. We had our time. It was great when we were together. Would I go back there? No. Have I moved on? Yes. Has she moved on? Yes. Am I bitter? No.
But you're not. If you bumped into her at a party or something, it wouldn't be awkward.
I don't speak to her. Like, we don't speak. We don't.
There's just no real interaction.
Yeah. There's no interaction. So it wouldn't be awkward. Like, I'm here on. I know what I'm here for in my capacity.
I hear from a lot of people, and I'm not one for gossip either, which is why I always get out of the office, and I never used to take part in any of the kind of rumor mongering that was going on. But I did hear from a lot of people over the last year or two that she has burnt a few bridges, and it's not just with you. She's like, she apparently doesn't make it easy for you to get along with her in some situations.
Look, I don't know if that's true. Do you know what I think? Like, Bonang's very successful.
Sure.
And with that much success, like, all of us are insane in one way or another. Gareth, like, there's things that you do that are like, well, like, what's Suk doing?
Totally.
You know what I'm saying? And it's like, there's no ways you're going to be this successful and not have flaws. And that's probably one of her flaws.
Yeah. In other words, it's a, it's an eccentricity almost. It's one of the things that makes you successful, but it also makes you different to other people.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever look at yourself and think, what is my flaw?
I know all my flaws.
Do you?
Yeah, of course, man. I procrastinate a lot. What else do I do that's not... I move at a very fast pace, sometimes leaving people behind me. I come across as very judgmental because I'm enlightened and I ask the right questions and I make people uncomfortable.
Right.
So, like, I don't know whether that's a good or a bad thing, but, like, it is what it is.
It's probably a good thing. It's only a bad thing
I'm terrible at looking after my body. Terrible.
Really?
Terrible.
What are you feeling, a bit fat at the moment?
I am. I'm a little bit podgy.
this is where I look at Fresh. This guy, I mean, he's got a family, right? He's got kids. We don't have kids. We don't have to worry about that.
His focus is on another level. Dude, and I mean, like, he's in the habit
He's got the wife, he's got the kids, he's got the job, he's got the club gigs, he's got all sorts of other business interests everywhere, and he manages to stay fit.
Yeah.
Does he have 26 hours?
No, but it's a mental state. I mean, like,
unreal.
You've got the time to go to gym, bro. I've got a gym at my house, and I don't even walk into it. Like, yes. That's how bad it is. So it's just for me, it's not that important. Like,
okay, so you don't prioritize.
No, I don't prioritize, like, my, yeah, which is a long story short, I don't.
Do you want to have kids one day?
I want to have a big family. Six,
really?
Six, seven kids.
Well, you better start. How old are you now?
150-year plan.
How old are you?
I am 33. No, that's, don't worry, bro.
You better get banging now.
I'll get there.
But it's interesting, like, people are also starting to have kids later, and some people just choose not to have them.
And you know what the thing is, like, having a family and having kids is all what life is about. Like, let's not fool ourselves here, guys. Like, we can have a million people following you on Twitter.
Our DNA just wants to make more of itself.
That's what it is. And human beings, we're social animals. We, like, thrive on having interaction, especially with people that we love. And when you've made them yourself, you love them even more. And like the Bible says, go forth and reproduce. Like, that's what we're here for. You know what I'm saying? And, like, do you want to be a 60-year-old DJ that says, you know, in my time,
but wouldn't it be worse to be a 60-year-old DJ still doing the clubs?
Yeah, that'd be terrible.
This is where you've moved into property.
Yes.
Among other things. I know you've got lots of things going on. You spin a lot of plates in the air at the same time.
Yeah.
Which is exhausting, I'm sure.
No, it is. It does take its toll on you. But, like, also, I mean, like, the fear of, I mean, like, you know how it is. If you're a DJ and you're booked for medicines and you're driving to medicines and you have a tire puncture and you can't make medicines, you have to give them their money back.
Right. And in radio, you could get fired
any
day.
Yeah, they could be like, this is your last link. Thanks for playing. Goodbye. You're in a car accident. You're incapacitated. You can't work. There's no money coming in. You're finished. That's it. You're done. So
the property, what are we, residential, commercial, industrial?
At the moment, like, learning every single day. I'm currently focused on student accommodation, which falls under residential.
That's good stuff.
So you're
a landlord?
At the moment, yeah, definitely.
So I'm imagining some student pulls into
they don't know it's me.
Okay, but they pull into their digs. They, like, get sorted out. Then the geezer bursts. They're not going to pick up their phone and call you phonic.
No, they don't call you phonic.
Because the minute they find out that you're their landlord.
No, some of them know, but, like, it's like they know they know where to go to deal with those things.
They're like, guys, party at my house. It belongs to you, phonic.
No parties. There's definitely no parties, man. And look, it's a difficult industry to be in. But why I chose property, because I thought about it and I was like, okay, cool. If I have to take the entire music industry, first of all, the Samro, right? Then all of Samro put together, the history of Samro isn't 0.01% of the entire global music industry.
Yeah.
That's taking Huma Sigela, Mary Makeba, Letambulu, throwing them in there.
And now there's no money.
It's even worse now.
Yeah.
It's even worse now. Like, now it's cuck. Like,
you probably won't make any money off
an
album. An album is more of a brand statement.
Yeah, it's a brand exercise.
Yeah.
So take the entire music industry. Do you want 1% of the South African music industry or 1% of the South African property market?
It's an easy one to decide, right?
Yeah, but I mean, like, the easy decision, but difficult, because that also the barriers of entry into property aren't the easiest.
You and I were both involved in a campaign that got a lot of shit from feminists
a while ago.
Geez. Because we put on heels. It was a thing for Marie Claire. And I remember we were trying to do the right thing, you know, like we're guys and men don't really pay attention to women's rights issues mostly. They're just they're kind of patronizing about it and pat the women on the head and say, "Yes, darling, you go ahead with that.
For
you
sure.
Sweet little thing." And so we decided to get involved. And we put on these stupid heels and we posed for a photo shoot. And then people gave you so much shit.
Yeah, bro. I've never seen anything like that in my life. But it's also, you know,
let's just be clear about this. When you got into shit about what was alleged to have been abuse, the case was dropped.
Exactly.
You've never been found guilty of anything.
I don't have a criminal record.
There's nothing.
Yeah.
But the sting was such that the magazine almost said to you at a certain time, "Look, maybe we rather don't want you in here." I mean, that's insulting.
No, you're not fucked me off about that thing, right?
Tell me.
Is that when I got the call, because it came via 5FM, I was like, cool, yeah, I'll do it. You know what I'm saying? Because like in my mind, I haven't done anything wrong. It's a good cause. I agree with the cause.
Yeah, you mean
I support the cause. Sure. Yeah, I mean well. I say to the editor, like, "You do realize that like having me on this thing is going to be controversial." "No, don't worry, darling. We've got your back."
Yeah.
Like, we know, we thought this through. We know what we're doing. Right? When shit hits the fan, we're going to have to pull you off the thing.
They throw you under the bus.
So I'm like, what? Like, I was like, okay, cool, sweet. Do your thing. Like, you do what you need to do. But I discussed this with you. You said you know what you're doing. And
it's amazing how like big brands and corporations and magazines.
And I don't want to sound like a male chauvinist pig, because that's what it's going to sound like with what I'm about to say next. But I think a guy would have made a decision and stuck to his decision. And this woman dropping her decision, said a lot about women in power than it does about men in power.
Mm.
Do you know what I'm saying? And I feel like if she had stuck to her decision and said, "I made this decision based on these facts. Euphonic doesn't have a criminal record. The case was dropped.
Yeah.
Him and his girlfriend got back together."
Yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. She would have made a bigger statement than doing what she did, because she literally crumbled under the pressure.
People are cowardly, right? I had Jack Parra in here the other day. We were talking about his whole controversy with Ford, because he went up on stage at a Ford function they'd booked him for. And, you know, his rap is kind of edgy.
Mm.
He uses a little bit of swearing here and there. And he said he tamed it, especially because he realized it was a corporate event. And they pulled him off halfway through his act. And he got into huge shit, and he just wants nothing to do with Ford now. And they obviously canceled him, and they told him, you know, get off the stage and all that kind of thing. So it was ugly. But again, corporations, they book someone. They don't know what they're getting. And then it's that person's fault.
Yeah.
And I mean, there are a lot of companies in this country who are really cowardly.
Yeah.
They want to be seen to be doing the right thing when they might just be capitalist profiteers.
My thing is, I don't care about all of that stuff. But I'm saying, like, and I come from, like, and me being me, I make a decision and I stick to the decision.
Right.
Irrespective of what consequences and repercussions come with it. Like, whatever I say and do, like, I'm also saying I'll be able to deal with the consequences and the repercussions of what I'm doing.
Are feminists still giving you shit?
All the time.
Really?
But, I mean, like, they want to give me shit because they need someone to give shit to.
Yeah. I had a case at the BCCSA once, where I had a girl on, and she was an AIDS activist, and I said something about young girls. She was doing amazing work while so many women are lying on their backs with their legs spread. It was kind of all jocular, and it was in a joke. And I was never found guilty by the BCCSA.
Yeah.
In fact, they dismissed the case and everything else. And I still get the label misogynist as a result of that. They took from it what they wanted. They didn't care about the results.
They don't care about the facts, but like, this is human beings. They don't care about the facts. They care about what they want to feel. And that's fine. Feel however you want to feel. Say whatever you want to, which is why, like, now, like, I'm really more insensitive to other people's thoughts and opinions than I used to be. Before, I used to like dilly-dally and be like, okay, cool. And now I'm like, fuck it.
Well,
done.
I for here. Example, I just stay the hell away from some really important discussions that I want to be a part of, but I just realize it's too much admin. So like when race comes up now.
No, like Gareth can't say, you can't say anything because you are Gareth, but they can say and think however they want to feel because, I'm not on a public platform. I'm not a celebrity. Like the bottom line here, guys, is that like all of us are still human beings and Gareth doesn't see himself as an ultra human being. Unless you're saying to us that like, we are ultra human beings.
In which case, we're going to do what we want anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I don't. It's not worth it. And Twitter has become horrible. And it's just not the place it used to be. And we've got to move on.
Do you know what somebody made me think about? I was attending a workshop last week about like capital mechanisms and whatever.
What kind of workshops do you get?
Nah, bro. Like, I'm serious about like making myself a better person.
What are you doing in your spare time? Holy motherfucker!
I'm serious about like making myself a better person. And like, you know, like the thing is, money is like for you to use and spend money wisely. You need a driver's license.
Yeah.
Because you're not gonna drive a car without a driver's license. I don't think you can responsibly use and spend money if you don't know how to use and spend money properly. And part of the things that came out of this work, but it's like it's something that I've always known, and I'm sure you know it as well. You are the sum total of the five people you hang around with. So for every minute that you spend going through your timeline on Twitter, those people are adding or watering down to the human being that you are. From their thoughts, the things that they moan about, the things that they think about, et cetera, et cetera. So do you want to water yourself down by, like, does Twitter add or take away from your life?
Doesn't add.
Exactly.
So we should really delete our account.
But we need it because we need to tell people, catch me playing here. And I mean, like out of the 100% of the people, like maybe 10% use it for the right things.
Why don't I take over your Twitter account for a week and you take over mine and we see who gets into more shit?
I'm not even trying, bro. Because like there was a parody account that tweeted some horrible stuff about black coffee. Still to this day, people are like, why do you hate black coffee so much? And I'm like, God. It was a parody account. Like, don't create what you want this thing to be. Like, take it for what it is. See the world as the world is, not as you are. Like, you want there to be drama between me and black coffee. There's nothing.
By the way, hasn't he done well?
Nah, bro. Like,
blowing up, right?
Nah, Dirk's doing exceptionally well.
Is there any real beef between you and AKA? Because people always bring that up too.
It's so weird, bro. Like, I don't hate the Oak. Yeah. Like, I don't have a reason to hate the Oak. Because when he started dating Bonang, was it while I was seeing her?
No,
it was way after I was seeing
her. But people make a thing about
that. They want to make a thing of it. Right. And that's how they want to handle it. You know, like, does he hate me? If he does,
none of your business.
Yeah, he's wasting time.
That's my favorite line, is what other people think of you is none of your business.
Yeah, like, I don't hate the Oak. The Oak makes amazing music as far as I'm concerned. Sure. He's one of the best rappers in the country. I have no reason to hate or dislike him. Like, will I take jabs at him on Twitter? Sometimes.
But because it's funny.
Because it's funny. Like, I sit there honing myself because it's hilarious.
But it is.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Like, I wish people had a sense of, like, if they could see that you were smiling when you tweeted something, there would be a different response to it.
No, they'd still be like, you're pretending. Because that's how they would look at it. And I mean, like, I've had like my Twitter spats with like either about him or like in and around the space. But for me, when people's mothers, children, and whatever were getting involved, like, it's not a space I can play in anymore because, like, ultimately, at the end of any day, I care about what my mother thinks, and my mother, I can't justify to my mother. Mm. Like, I can say to my mother, these people were pissing me off, so I swore at them.
Yeah.
Like, I can tell my mother that, but I can't justify to my mother how somebody else's mother was involved in something that I was involved in. Like, how do I...
Your parents must be really, really pleased with how you turned out. They didn't think this when you dropped out, right?
No, not at all. I had to prove them wrong. I had to prove them wrong. And I mean, like, still every single day, like, even with anything that I do it with them in mind, thinking about like how they are going to perceive anything that I'm doing, how they look at anything that I'm doing. And also, I just like, I'm working so hard because I actually want to just go to my mom one day and be like, Mom, stop working. You don't have to work anymore. Like, I've got this.
That would be
awesome. That's my ultimate goal.
Well, listen, dude, I mean, I always love catching up with you. We've covered a whole lot of stuff today.
Yeah.
We've learned plenty. What are we plugging at the moment? What do people need to buy? What do people need to see?
Look, man, like I've got a clothing store that myself and Kent have
called
Debut Store.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just us getting into the retail space, trying to compete with Woolworths.
Go for it. Dream big, right?
Yeah. There's nothing else. It's the only way. The property stuff's doing exceptionally well. I'm learning
We can't invest with you yet.
No, not yet.
One
not
day.
Yet. It's coming.
One
it's coming.
Day when you're it's a major it's, conglomerate.
It's,
yeah, yeah,
it's coming.
Sure.
It's coming. What else is going on? The music is doing amazing.
You just put out a track with Nasty C, right?
It's ridiculous.
Tell me about that.
So I took one of Nasty C's songs, Hell No.
Talented kid, right?
Extremely talented. Sure. He's exceptional. He sticks out like a...
I had him in here and I didn't know who he was before he came in. And we started talking and he's focused as hell.
Yeah, he sticks out like a sore thumb. He is the answer. He is the answer. So I took one of his songs and did a bootleg mix of it.
Yeah.
And then I thought, you know what, let me just ask the Oak if he, just out of courtesy. And he was so cool about it. He was like, yeah, man, he digs it. He loves it. Then I was like, cool, so how are we going to do this? I made some of my suggestions. He was like down for it. And yeah, we dropped the remix for Hell No. It's doing amazing. I've just recently dropped a single with Donald. That's Runaway Love.
He's also doing so well.
Yeah, that's massive. The single with Mikasa is crazy. It's insane. I did a song with Zion last year. I'm in the studio working on music for the summer of 2016, 2017. And it's a different sound, you know, because I think I also got caught up in make music to make people dance and make them happy. And now it's stopped. Like now I literally make music that I want to listen to in my car when I'm driving, that I want to sing along to, music that makes me happy. And if it's going to make one other person happy, then great. And I think so far so good, because from Moments to Don't Want to Be Your Friend to Runaway Love, so far so good. So I'm anxious and I'm also excited to see what people are gonna think about the album. And then, bro, there's this project that I've been working on for the last 32 years now, and it's hard work every single day, and that's myself. Working on making myself a better person, getting myself clued up, and also to the next person, I'm happy to seem dumb, but I don't want to be dumb to myself. I want to be I don't need to know about everything and anything.
I can't claim to know everything about you. I can't even claim to know half the things about you. We worked together for a while. We've had a few conversations. I always am happy to see you because you're one of those people who has a lot of interesting stuff to say.
Yeah.
You're leading an interesting life. You've got such energy. I keep on keeping on, man. I mean, every time you succeed and someone else feels bad, it's a compliment to you.
Nah,
and every time you do, it's also an inspiration to someone who wants to be like you. You're doing such a great job. I'm very proud of being your friend.
Yeah, man. Big up, Gareth Cliff. Hiya, Gareth.
Thank you, funny.
All right.
Short thank you, brother. Nice to see you.
And that's another thing about me, bro. I can go from, hiya, Gareth, to Shapunjan, keep an up on Fritz Grand.
And that confuses people because maybe they're not as dexterous. No, well done, dude.
Short, man.
Keep it up. CliffCentral.com.